Right. Toby, I think you're gonna have to do most of the talking today because I have the freshman plague.
Excellent, excellent. It might be stemming from that terrible smell that's been invading the first floor of this very
Let's
building.
start by talking about this is where we're gonna pause to have the intro spot. I'm Andrew Marzomi.
I'm Toby Wilson Bates.
And this is The
The Office
Office
Hour.
Hour. So let's talk about this, Toby. There has been a smell in Skiles Hall. Skiles, for those of you who are not familiar with the Georgia Tech campus, is the building shared by the mathematics department and also the department of the school, rather, of literature, media, and communication, which is, the Georgia Tech's basically version of an English department. Little bit of trivia: at the University of Minnesota, where I did my PhD, there was also a combined English math building. Yeah, and I feel like that's saying something. I feel like it's saying something so obvious that I don't even need to say what it's saying.
It's like all your friends like keep putting you sitting next to the same person who's kind of a mutual friend that you don't know very well.
Okay, so when did you first notice this smell that we're gonna talk about?
A couple weeks ago, probably 2, 3 weeks ago.
Oh, really? You didn't notice it at all last year?
No, I don't think I was downstairs enough last year.
Okay, you weren't downstairs enough. So what the smell is, for those of you listening at home, is there is a smell in outside in the Skiles building. The Skiles building, how would you describe the architecture of this building?
It's a concrete block that looks a bit like a bunker. I believe this is where everyone nearby is supposed to run in case of a tornado.
Okay, it's that kind of place, like an evacuation facility. There's some sort of outdoor components to this building. It's kind of like many places in the South or California. It's sort of an outdoor indoor kind of structure. And I first noticed the smell actually last year when I first came here in the fall, around the same time. I thought it was vomit or garbage.
I thought that it was the smell of manure being used on the plants outside, but like as if the manure had sat out for way too long and had become really moldy.
Right. I just assumed, okay, big public university in, Georgia, it's going to smell like vomit some places. Like that's just, par for the course. But, okay, so this smell went away for a long time, and I've totally forgot about it until returning back to campus this semester, and which is when you noticed it as
Yeah,
well,
most
right?
definitely.
So, big reveal, listeners. It turns out I did some research, which mostly entailed going to the Georgia Tech subreddit, which doesn't, of course, really count as research. I wouldn't.
I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the kind of research I would encourage my students to do for an assignment, but it's research, I guess. And I discovered that, at least according to the Georgia Tech subreddit, that the culprit of the smell is not garbage, nor is it vomit, but rather, it is a large ginkgo tree, which was planted, I don't know, we should probably look this up, at some point in the history of the Skiles building, right in the middle of the
Yeah,
courtyard.
intentionally.
Intentionally?
I'd assume.
I'd assume, I mean, most trees, I feel like, are planted intentionally, especially when they're, like, in the courtyard of a middle of a building.
Yeah, urban landscaping.
Right, like, but so anyway, what the deal is with this ginkgo tree, and this is a problem that only results from female ginkgo trees, right? Because
Really?
the male ginkgo trees do not produce the fruit. But female ginkgo trees produce fruit called ginkgo nuts, right? Which apparently are quite delicious if you eat them, when they're ripe, when you grab them off the tree or right after they fall to the ground. But the problem is that and we should probably look this up. I don't know. The problem is that when the fruit rots, it produces, it's like butyric acid or something like that. It's whatever, it's the same chemical that is produced by butter when it spoils. Like, you know that smell of like rancid butter?
Vaguely.
It's the exact same smell as the smell in Skiles because it's the same chemical that's being produced. So basically all this to say is that there is a female ginkgo tree in the middle of Skiles that is producing fruit every, you know, early autumn. And when that fruit falls to the ground and rots, it makes the building smell like vomit.
Problem solved.
Problem solved.
No, wait. No. Not, it's not at all.
So, yeah, I mean, not at all. Not at all. I didn't notice it as much today, but that's because I'm still recovering from the freshman plague and, like, my, you know, my nasal passages are not as clear as they normally are.
Yeah, man, living in paradise here.
I know, right? It's the one silver lining of having having sinuses that are clogged with, you know, bacteria and stuff.
Do you want to talk about nostalgia?
Yeah, let's talk about nostalgia.
So, I researched almost as effectively as you by typing nostalgia quotes.
Uh-huh.
Into the Google search engine.
Uh-huh.
Basically because I wanted to have a couple pull quotes just to kind of float around to kind of ground our idea about nostalgia. Our thinking was for this episode, before discovering the atrocity of this ginkgo tree, that we talk about 90s nostalgia. And at least in my opinion, this is in some way not actually nostalgia or only insofar as it can be marketed. So the two pull quotes are, one is Milan Kundera, who said, "The Greek word for return is nostos, algos means suffering, so nostalgia is suffering caused by an unappeased yearning to return."
That sounds like something that our students would do on paper.
Deal with it, Milan. And meanwhile, top of the class is Marcel Proust, who says, "Remembrance of things past is not necessarily the remembrance of things as they were."
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, man. That what
is
write
it?
A book.
I'm trying to remember. So, like, Le Recherche du Temps Perdu, right, has, like, two translations. One of them is Remembrance of Things Past. What's the... It's the other one. In Search of Lost Time.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
You're a time guy. Like, describe what's that... Because, like... This reminds me of, like, what is it? I forgot, you know, I don't know German or anything, but apparently...
I barely know English.
In German, when Metamorphosis, the Kafka novel, was first published, the German word for it was just, like, transformation. Like, it was much more boring, but they, like, called it the Metamorphosis.
Oh, that's
because
wild.
Because it's, like, kind of sexier, right?
Yeah, and it kind of deserves, a boring title, right?
Yeah. I mean, what do you think, Remembrance of Things Past in Search of Lost Time? Which do you like better?
It's worth saying that I've really intentionally avoided Proust as much as possible.
Oh, yeah.
Which is not to say I haven't read a lot of Proust.
Okay.
In French and in English, but rather... Like, I just think there are dragons when it comes to trying to assign meaning. I mean, my great love, Gerard Jeannette, essentially spends all of his book on narrative talking about how it's all just to try to figure out Proust and how he's terrified that his book will essentially make people even less able to understand him.
Someone talked about Walter Benjamin as being... you know, nostalgic for the recently outmoded, right? Like wanting to have been a part of the generation that was just before his.
Is he kind of like a hipster?
Yeah. I mean, that's what I would say. I would definitely consider Walter Benjamin a hipster. Do you think that like being a hipster is specifically about the generation immediately preceding yours?
No, honestly, I feel like, for me anyway, that the whole concept of being a hipster is supposed to be kind of a moving target. But I think there's a sense at the moment that the hipster is just one thing. It's just like an urban beekeeper with a beard or something like
yeah.
that. And that strikes me as actually against the entire concept of the hipster as someone who's really interested in experiencing sort of alt lifestyles to a certain degree and like performing that alternativeness in ways that make people both sort of adore slash shun them.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it's a relevant concept anymore.
No, no.
I think the hipster died in like 2009, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
You know, I think like once the guys that like beat me up in high school were listening to LCD System and they're lifted, you know, pickup trucks, then like that's when the hipster was dead.
Yeah, I think that's right. I always think about the end of Dadaism, you know, this moment, at least the sort of apocryphal ending of it when the founder, they find a wallet and they have to decide which is the rebellious act, sort of returning the wallet to the waiter or keeping the wallet and then realizing that no matter what they did, they were sort of creating a kind of politics they could no longer live with, and so they dissolved the whole movement.
I haven't heard that story.
You haven't heard
about
it? It might just be like apocryphal, but this idea that, yeah, like I think once hipsterism is something that, as you said, people in lifted trucks can sort of also appropriate, then it's not a thing anymore.
Right. Or I mean, do you think that hipsterism, Dada, like, do you think it's this kind of like contrarian impulse that just emerges every now and then in different forms?
I think it's contrarianism mixed with privilege. I mean, right? That's like every other page of Kerouac.
Right. Contrarianism mixed with privilege. Yeah. So, okay. So like if the hipster is dead, what is there a... Do we have something else now that's sort of like supplanting that?
I don't know.
That
and
role.
This thing that I was thinking about talking about, this guy, George Zimmel. Have you run into him a bit?
I haven't, no.
He's a big influence on both Heidegger and the kind of several other schools of thought, especially Benjamin, who cites him a lot in things like The Storyteller. And Zimmel had this whole idea about objective and subjective culture, or I guess objective culture and subjectivity. And people have, I think, sort of misidentified him as a Kantian. And the basic idea was that objective culture are all the objects that we produce to sort of organize culture, things like religion, government, technology, this sort of stuff, cities. And then subjectivity was the sort of consistent attempt by the individual to make those things part of their life space, to make those things meaningful. It's like if you name your car or something like that, right? Like this is an object. It's an object produced to interact with and be part of this large objective culture. But there's a way in which I can kind of own it, in which I can make it part of my own life. And Zimmel's real fear was that in modernity, there were just so many objects and so many controls and so many structures that no individual would ever be able to actually kind of self-actualize in the face of all this material, because
there's too much stuff.
Yeah, they're kind of overloaded in modernity, and psychically that doesn't allow them to ever be themselves. And so I think somehow this is connected to hipsters.
Maybe hoarders are the new hipsters.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah, like it would have to... Oh, hoarders. I don't know. I feel like hoarders have always been hoarders. You know?
That's true.
Like they had it going on way. They were like the original. You can't take that away from them.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, like people that still have CDs. That's not hip though. Like my dad has CDs still.
No, that's not the same thing. I don't think. Although I do think that does speak to this impulse to kind of continue working on an earlier project. Like an earlier version of yourself coming to terms with the world that does not want to deal with, you know, SoundClouds and Pandora and, you know, iTunes or whatever.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever named a car? What's the weirdest object that you've ever given like a name to?
I don't know. I have to punt on that one. I'm not big into naming things, you know?
Me neither. I mean, I like coming up with different names for my cat. Like, every week I've got, like, three new things I want to name my cat.
But what's your cat's current name?
Nietzsche. That's his actual name. My original name for my cat was going to be Mr. Sophistication.
Nice.
Which is the name of the, like, MC in this fictional burlesque club in the John Cassavetes film, A Killing of a Chinese Bookie.
Should we talk about Cassavetes?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we probably should. We should probably save that for next time, though. Maybe we can keep... let's defer the Cassavetes conversation so that people, so that our audience is, like, man, really wanting it.
He's so hot right now. It's so clear that people will keep listening.
Is he? I don't know. We'll find out next time, won't we? The Office Hour is produced by Andrew Marzoni and Tobias Wilson-Bates. Burton Fellows in the Writing and Communication Program at the Georgia Institute of Technology. To find out more about the topics discussed, see our page at textile.lmc.gatech.edu. Thanks for listening!